ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Monday. Corbin Middlemass with you as we get set to go on AFL Monday. All your hot button issues on the back of round 18 of the AFL Premiership season. Ben Cameron joins me along with Adam Ramanaskas in the house. Let's get into it. Here's AFL Monday. Kicks down to half forward. Hall, a heavy landing, and Butters gets up clutching his ankle too.
Jack Gittivan standing
with the play on.
The umpire called play on.
And this is a 50, and then Gittivan's just been knocked down by Cripps. And Gittivan will go for a sprint down to the goal line. Take a look at this on the replay.
I saw the umpire's arms go up.
I'm with you, Bertie.
You saw it.
100% his arms were in the air.
It was a little bit confusing. I try not to get too bogged down in the weeds with those things. I think we've probably got our own things we want to work on out of that game rather than worry about those moments.
De Goey out of the middle. What a graphic stay. Got the perfect ride. Knee into the back of Combat and comes down with the footy from straight in front. Deserves a goal to finish. Straight out of the centre bounce.
On 774 ABC Melbourne,
ABC Sport Digital,
and ABC Listen.
This is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben.
Round 18 is done. There's only six games left for each of the teams in the home and away season. The latest on Jeremy Cameron, the star cat. Is the game too hard to umpire? Who is playing for an All-Australian spot in the last 6 weeks? Plus, does the Bombers' form line hurt or help James Hurd and his case to be reinstated as the Essendon coach? Plus, our Mad Monday with Grumpy Rammer. We've got our winners and losers. It's all ahead today on AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben. 1-300-222-774. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron's across the desk from me. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corbin. Great to be here. I've been saying for a long time that previous Essendon number nines,
yes,
are not actually grumpy. It's just their disposition. I speak of Brendan Goddard and Adam Ramanaskas. They seem grumpy. They're actually pretty happy kind of guys, so good to be here on a Monday night.
With the youngest Essendon Premiership player on planet Earth, Adam Ramanaskas. Hello, Ram.
Hello. I always say don't let the truth get in the way of grumpiness. So when people, when you give an opinion, that doesn't mean you're grumpy. That just means you've got an opinion.
Yep.
And that's what we're here for. To,
correct.
To have an opinion.
And we want to hear yours on 1-300-222-774. That's 1-300-222-774. I've had a go at picking my All-Australian team, which always makes great radio in the past when someone sits there and reads 23 names from the back line, such and such name and everything else. But I'll try and do it in a fun, dynamic way that leads to some interesting conversation. And you're welcome to participate as part of that. The news of the day, though, Ben, centres around Jeremy Cameron. So left AC joint injury. He is going in for surgery, and the club is anticipating that it will be in the 4 to 6 week range, which could rule out his regular season. Obviously, six games to go, but at least it paints a little bit of optimism that he will return in 2026 for the Cats. Of course, Geelong have lost 5 of their last 6 games. Some good news for both Jack Henry and Tanner Bruin. So Henry had the throat injury and Bruin a neck complaint. Both are going to be monitored this week, but neither of them have been ruled out for the short week and the Thursday night fixture against the Saints. Cameron's obviously the headline here. So 4 to 6 with the AC joint injury and in for surgery.
Yeah, I thought he only did half the job. I mean, when I snapped my AC joint, I at least broke the collarbone as well. So I thought he could have gone all in, Jeremy Cameron. But I'm surprised it's as hopeful as that,
yeah,
really, with the severity of the injury. And you could see the step, as they call it, when you do the AC joint, when it popped out. It was quite gruesome. But
did you do yours in the same way, as a big heavy collision, as some other player going low hard trying to win a ground ball?
There was a big heavy collision. It was just me in the ground trying to to slap the ball back and save four, which I did, let the record show. But the question is, Rammer, is it curtains for Geelong? So they have lost 5 of their last 6 games, and I ran the numbers today. The last time a premier lost 5 games in a 6-game span in their premiership season was Richmond in 1969.
Wow.
So it's
1969.
So it generally does not happen that a team loses five games in a six-game span and goes on to win the premiership. Only four teams have done it in history. 49 Essendon, 16 Fitzroy, that's 1916,
yep.
And 1900 Melbourne. Very different comp back then. So 69's a long time ago. History would tell you that they're not winning it this year.
So the glass half full approach here is they've lost those five games by under four goals. So the biggest margin was the game we did the other week against Brisbane at 22 points.
Mm.
So you look at Carlton, 4 points, Adelaide, 1 point. Then they beat Gold Coast by 45. Freo, 9 points, Brisbane, 22 points, GWS, 13 points. So there's no blowouts. Now, I'd be more concerned if I'm seeing, you know, eight goal margins that they're losing by there. So they're clearly in all the games. Now, you look at their run home. They go St Kilda at home, Melbourne at the G, Collingwood at the G, Essendon at home. North Melbourne, Richmond. So you would say St Kilda, I'd go on, they'd probably win at GMHBA.
Yeah.
Or sorry, at Cadinia Park.
Yeah.
Melbourne at the G, well, they're unbeatable there. Collingwood at the G, 50-50.
Yeah.
They beat Essendon.
Yep.
They probably beat North.
Yep.
And they beat Richmond.
Yeah. There's only two layups, and you'd think they'll start favourite against North and the Saints. But Saints are tricky the way they're going about it at the moment. You think they got enough to beat them?
Yeah. Look, what they're going to have to do, they're going to have to restructure a forward line.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. So where are they going to get their goals from? Can Shannon Neal step up in this next six-week period?
Mm. Well, they'd already restructured the forward line a little bit by sending Jezza to the back flank, but you're right.
They had 60 entries and kicked 11 goals. Yeah. 60. Yeah. So they're getting plenty of supply. Interestingly, since round 12, our friends at Champion Data tell us fourth easiest team to score against and the fifth easiest team to punish off turnover. So,
so that's work rate off turnover. Yep.
Right. So that's easy. You can correct
that's
that.
That's easy fixed. Yep.
It was starting to get urgent for Geelong and on the wrong side of history with those numbers.
Yep. But this is the thing. Like you look at Bailey Smith and Max Holmes.
Mm.
They run incredibly hard forward, but they don't have the coverage behind them at the moment. To go, okay, boys, we'll look after you once you've gone forward. And that's where they're getting punished.
What do you reckon about the Cats? 1-300-222-774. Is it season over? You're welcome to participate on the talkback line, 1-300-222-774. The other major injury of the weekend was clearly Zach Butters, who's got a syndesmosis injury. He's going in for surgery in the coming days. Now, Port Adelaide say that post-surgery, it's going to be 30 to 35 days. They hope that he'll be available for the last two games of their season, which is against Melbourne at Adelaide Oval in the penultimate round, and then Essendon away from home here in Melbourne in round 24. Now, I've run the numbers on this. So from now until Saturday of round 23, it is 33 days.
Yeah.
So that's the penultimate round home game at Adelaide Oval. You'd think if he's going to come back and have a farewell for Port, of course, we're connecting dots here as a free agent and closely linked to a move back to Victoria. He's going to be right up against it. That's if all things go well. Stewie Jew spoke about this earlier today as well, the assistant coach at Port Adelaide, where he said a lot of the damage with the syndesmosis, they actually won't be able to find until they do the surgery. Yeah. So they'll know more. But he's going to have that surgery here in Melbourne in the coming days. So start the clock from there.
That seems optimistic for mine. Like high-grade syndesmosis injuries have generally been 8 to 12 weeks from what we've seen from other players, at least on the 8-week end of that bracket. Oh, I think that's a little bit optimistic. And then the other question is, if you're Zach Butters and you've been a player manager for a long period of time, Rama, and you've got a big contract coming up, would you be advising your player to go out there and risk a potential farewell game?
What if you're Port Adelaide? He's your asset.
But this is the question then. So will Port Adelaide, if Port Adelaide think he's staying, they're probably not playing him. If they think he's leaving, are they forcing him to play?
But they still have to, if they're going to match the bid for free agency, which every club says they'll do and hardly any of them ever do, isn't he also their asset to try and get the most amount for? If he's coming off back-to-back ankle injuries.
I don't think
they'll match?
Well, no. That's not the point I'm trying to make is I don't think his value is going up or down by whether he plays or not.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, if he wants, you could understand the push for. I mean, we're sort of jumping ahead, but if he is leaving and he wants to play one more game for Port Adelaide and thank the fans and everything else, you can understand the motivation to try and push it and get back in the team. He's been closely linked to a move to the Western Bulldogs. I'm not necessarily in that camp, but I asked Kylie Watson-Wheeler about it earlier today about whether she'd met with Zach Butters when she sat in this studio this morning on Raph Epstein's morning program on 774 ABC Melbourne.
No, I have not met with Zach Butters, and we still haven't had any indication that he's planning on making any kind of move, but, you know, my answer remains the same as last time. Obviously, he'd be amazing to be a part of our team. And if and when the opportunity arises, you know, we'll give it our best shot.
This is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben. Adam Ramanaskis in the house. Your calls on 1300 222 774.
It felt like the hot button issue out of the weekend was undoubtedly the 50-metre penalty for Jack Ginnivan after Adam Chera ran over the mark. Matt Stevic, the officiating umpire. If you haven't seen it as yet, the way it played out, Ginnivan's got the free kick. The mark set 47 metres out, 45 degree angle, right half forward. Ginnivan sort of 15 metres back off the mark. Now, Blake Hardwick comes to run around the back, and you can hear Matt Stevic say, away, away. Let's listen how it played out, as picked up on the umpire mics.
Yep, stand, stay clear. Stand, Adam. Blake. Ten. Play.
So what happened there is Hardwick runs around the back. Jack Ginnivan feigns to give the handball. So first of all, before that, you hear Matt Stevic say away to Blake Hardwick, who's the player getting around the back. Ginny feigns to give the handball. And really what happens is he balks the umpire. So the umpire, Matt Stevic, waves his arms up in the play-on motion, and he says, play on.
Yeah.
He gets to the on and bails out of it. But at that point, Chera on the mark has heard the play-on call. He's sprinted over the mark. And Matt Stevic, for reasons only really known to him at this point in time, a 12-time grand final umpire and 60 final umpire, pays a 50-metre penalty rather than saying, hang on. Time on.
So what
reset
should he have
the
done?
Mark. He should have said, time on.
Yep.
Let me reset the mark. And, Jack, you go back and take your kick again. But for whatever reason, he paid the 50-metre penalty in spite of the fact that he'd made a mistake and it led to a goal in that moment. So it was just a boo-boo.
1-300-222-774. Is the game too hard to umpire? 1-300-222-774.
So what should have happened in that case? I think Matt Stevic should have realised the error and just reset the mark.
Yeah, he can do that. That's all. That's within the rules. Reset the mark.
I look at it and go, well, there's been times when an umpire's called a mark before the players actually controlled it because they thought it was... They thought the player was going to mark it. Then he unfortunately drops it. They either call play on then in that situation or they ball it up. In that case, there was no advantage anywhere for anybody.
No.
So just reset the mark.
How's the thing we might just play the 15-second clip again and you can make your own mind up on what you heard given the explanation that Ben just provided off the back of it. But also when you listen to this, just keep an ear out for the rain.
Yeah, it's so heavy.
have a listen to this.
Stand, stay clear. Stand, Adam. Play. Ten. Play.
So he says he's definitely says play twice. Yeah. Dax off the SMS, by the way. Hey, guys, Saturday Blues Hawks. When does the weather constitute a delay or a postponement? The game was under 12s at best. Dangerous for all the players. Your thoughts, by the way, 1-300-222-774 if you want to participate in all this. 1-300-222-774.
It's only when lightning's in the area and lightning's threatening the ground. But I just want to go back to the umpiring. I feel like the bigger picture in all of this is that the umpires are... And clearly Matt Stevic in that moment was discombobulated. And after that, he pointed the wrong way. Yep. I feel like the game is so difficult for them to officiate at the moment that they're muddled. They can't
so
think clearly.
There's so much that is going through their head in terms of the decisions they have to make.
Yep.
Where is the mark? Is the player standing on the mark? Yep. How close is the protected zone?
Yeah.
You know, there's just so much going on in one moment. Like, that's just... That instance, there's six decisions that he has to be making there and thinking about.
So that's why a 12-time grand final umpire and a 60 final umpire can make that mistake, I think. Later on, like I said, he pointed the wrong way. We've already seen the instance this year where the umpire blew the whistle and paid the mark, then paid advantage. It wasn't a mark. It wasn't held for nearly long enough. You also can't pay advantage from a mark. So I think all of these things just prove that the game is too complicated for them to officiate in the way that it's operating at the moment. So I've said it before. I'll say it again. I think we need a symposium. I think we need the umpires together.
A symposium?
Symposium.
Yep.
Right.
And I think we're...
Is that like a big meeting or...?
It's basically just a fancy word for a meeting.
Right, gotcha.
Never use a fancy word when you can use a simple one.
Apparently, yep. Sure.
Get them together.
All the umpires?
No.
Key stakeholders in the game.
Key stakeholders. So, you know, the head of the umpires union, maybe Ray Chamberlain, our man,
yep.
will advocate for him. Some of the more senior umpires, the AFL, Greg Swan, Andrew Dillon, Laura Kane, whoever wants to come along from them, get together. What do you need? What do we need? What do we want the game to look like? How is it going to operate? And then beyond that, what they need to do is communicate better to the fan.
Yep.
Why certain yep. rules exist?
Well, think
and why they're and how they're actually being correctly officiated.
Think even Rama. I mean, we've been lucky enough to call the footy together for a number of years and stuff. How much have you learned even in the last 2 years working with Ray?
Incredible.
Like,
yeah. Initially, I was reluctant, and I was.
I think we all were.
I was like, it was like I was clashing with him, but I think then once he realised that. I was just asking questions about, well, this is from a player's mind and what they're thinking. Yeah. And then I had to realize that, well, this is from an umpire's mind as well.
Yeah.
I've learned an incredible amount about the rules.
You're also much more open to learn and take new information on board. So I feel like now we've all got to a point where we understand the rules in the game much better, and we're all richer for having Ray part of our coverage, and we love having him with us. But it's amazing, some of the other broadcasts we're on or that you listen to that don't have that kind of input that explain it from the umpire's point of view. I'll find I'll be watching games sitting there going, oh, no, Ray's explained that one. It makes sense. Mm. And yet nobody has the answer. So how do we get that more universal across the board that people understand what the umpires are trying to do and the cause and effect for what we see on the field?
I think the NBA and the NFL do it incredibly well.
Yep.
They've always got an umpire sitting in a studio with TVs around him, and they go to the umpire and they say, why did the umpire make this decision, or what was the rule here that was interpreted?
Which is why Corbin and I went to our bosses and said, look, we need Ray Chamberlain on the coverage. We want to mimic that. And by Corbin and I going to our bosses, I mean they came to us and said, Ray's available.
Yeah, we'll certainly have to proportion the credit somewhere else on that front. 1-300-222-774 is the talkback number. That's 1-300-222-774. The taunting rule was the other one which bobbed up on the weekend. I know it frustrated a lot of people on Thursday night. There's two ways to look at this. So the first way is obviously that, why is it applied in this moment that they've turned a blind eye and a deaf ear on so many other occasions? I guess the other way to look at it is to say, well, everybody knew the rule was there, and if you got away with it multiple times and you ultimately got stung, then silly you, essentially, for not making the adjustment.
So explain taunting to me.
So, that's
ruffling
a good question.
The ruffling the hair
is part of the taunting.
Is that it? Are we effectively saying that's the only reason that the rule was applied in that instance?
Yeah, you can go and bang bodies with someone and do whatever you want to do, but you can't ruffle their
head. So a player can go and kick the goal and get in the face of the opposition player
because
he might have got holding the ball or whatever.
This is exactly...
What's taunting?
This is at the feet of Greg Swan, really, as the new head of footy at the AFL. It's the same thing with the kick after the siren, where guys coming off their lines, where they've made these slight adjustments on the run. And essentially, as you say, there's holes in the system where you go, well, why is that taunting and the other thing isn't? And the inconsistencies.
They've got Chad Warner laughing with Luke Ryan at the time.
Yeah.
I thought it was an overinterpretation of the rule.
Right. Yeah. I was probably more the other way. I thought, if you speed in the 60 zone and you go over the limit and ultimately one day the speed camera's there and you get caught, then too bad.
Okay.
It's on you. Chris from Pakenham, the first of our callers, 1-300-222-774. Hello, Chris.
Hey, guys. How you going?
Very well, thanks, Chris.
Good. Yeah, just on the rules and how to adjudicate them. Like, the one that really gets me down is the advantage rule, or the call to play on, play the advantage. It's either one or the other. It's like they haven't got any advantage at all. They get tackled within half a second, or they've got so much advantage because everybody else has stopped on the field, and the guy that's at advantage is 30 metres down the track. And it's just so much of an advantage on that call or disadvantage. It should be, straightened out a little bit. It's just we were the beneficiary of that in the Hawks game over the weekend a couple of times. And, it's just glaringly obvious that it's an overreaction to a simple rule,
I'd agree with Chris on that. Just to jump in there, sorry, Corb. Like, how often 9 out of the 10 players stop and the one taking the advantage is 30 metres gone? I appreciate that is the advantage, but if everyone stops because of the whistle, you're taught to play to the whistle.
Yeah, which you could easily call play on or advantage without blowing the whistle, couldn't you? I don't understand why they can't do that.
Well, that's a good point.
Why does the whistle have to go?
Yeah.
Because
the umpire could just yell advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they blow the whistle as soon as they see the free kick. So they don't know there's an advantage.
Because what gets to me is a player takes advantage, then realizes there's a player in front of him, and he puts his hand up and goes, oh, no, I don't want it now.
I actually don't.
So you're either taking it or you're not.
I actually don't think that is practical. Right. So if I tackle you, say it's a centre ball up, and I clip you high, what's the umpire's first instinct got to be?
We'll just wait two Mississippis.
So now we want them to also go one Mississippi, two Mississippi. Oh, no, there's a bit of advantage.
Well, they've still called advantage anyway.
No, I actually don't think that's...
The only other alternative is you just kill the advantage rule.
You can run that past Ray. Okay. See how it goes.
Marlon's in Fremantle. Hello, Marlon.
Hi, lads. Hope you're doing well. Big fan of the podcast and the show. But, so I would like to talk about the umpiring as well. And I was just going to call in to say, I think you just simply cannot blame the umpires at all. Like, there's just so many rules where it's just so open to interpretation. Like, holding the ball, what is prior opportunity? I mean, is it, you know, 2 steps, 2 seconds? And then it's like, did they actually make an attempt to get rid of it or not? I feel like you just can't blame them. It's just so impossible to get consistency if it's just there's so much ambiguity.
Yeah,
with all the rules.
And I agree with that. If you look at a game of football, a player or a team make so many more mistakes than an umpire does.
Yeah.
Like we can ask Ray this on Saturday. Like they know the percentage of correct and incorrect decisions they make, and it's really high.
You know the stand rule is that on average there's less than one a game.
Yeah,
yeah.
And yet the amount of stuff that we talk
you
about
mean
when it comes to the stand 50-meter
penalty
rule.
Paid for
for stand
for not standing correctly.
Less than one a game on average.
So think about it like this: the AFL average for kicking efficiency for a team is about 68%.
Yeah,
and I reckon the umpires are a lot higher than that.
That's a great call from Marlon. And Marlon, be a friend, tell a friend. I'll put you on the wall of fame.
Marlon, appreciate that. Chris from Pasco Vale. Hello, Chris.
Yes, good evening, gents. I'll declare, firstly, I'm a North Melbourne supporter.
Mm-hmm.
Apologies. Now oh, dear. My question is about the MRO. Now, a young fella, Billy Frampton, got 1 week.
Yep.
Now, the Pies are going to appeal it.
Yes.
I will be fascinated to see if he gets off.
Mm. So he's already... Do you think he should?
I don't think he should have got off the Brodie Meyercheck tackle. Because if you tackle someone and you fracture their vertebrae, he didn't intend to fracture his vertebrae, but that is a dangerous tackle, surely.
Yeah, but so the counter argument to that, Chris, is should Clayton Oliver be suspended for breaking Jeremy Cameron's collarbone AC joint?
I didn't see that one, and I don't want... the focus is on concussion runner.
Oh no, I'm not downplaying that. So I look at the Jack Crisp one, and I see Paul Curtis, who gets 3 weeks previous to that, and I go, well, they sit in the same basket. Now, I don't believe that the players should be suspended, but if we're talking about what the interpretation is and what the precedent is to it, well, they should be.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. So if he appeals and gets off, they really need to revisit this. Because previously it's been an outcomes-based system. Let's be honest.
Yeah, which they'll tell you that it's not. It still has to be a dangerous tackle first, and then the outcome impacts the severity of the suspension. So lower end on the outcome, lesser suspension, higher end on the injury front, heavier suspension comes with it. I can tell you, by the way, Chris, that they are appealing that, it will go to the tribunal tomorrow night. So Frampton is challenging that that one match ban for the dangerous tackle. The question he needs to answer here is: did he exercise a reasonable duty of care, and was there excessive force? If there's excessive force, he's in trouble. If there's not, he should be right to play. Obviously, Matt Whitlock was able to continue in the game, so that will count in his favour. Nick from Brisbane, I will get to your call on the other side of the latest from the ABC newsroom. Of course, our Mad Mondays with Rama, so you're welcome to contribute one to that. I know Ben's even got he's got an audio piece that he's brought to his Mad Monday today. I will tell you who is playing for an All-Australian spot in the last 6 weeks of the season.
I heard that. It sounded like Corbin was having match committee at the back today. Yeah. I could just hear this phone call discussion. Discussing players and their merits and worth.
To a mystery, I wasn't discussing merit, but there was a lot of discussion about who made the team and who didn't. So I'm keen to hear from people out there as to... I think there's two key questions when it comes to the All-Australian team. Who are the key defenders? So if you've got one, you're more than welcome to ring through. Who are the key defenders? And can you have three rucks in the same All-Australian team? There are three clear standouts in the competition this year. Do they all fit in the same 23-man side?
I'll tell you why you can't.
What do you got for me, Ben? Get us going with the Mad Monday.
We normally do Mad Monday. We've got raging rammer here today because no Mark Murphy. But just something that's crept in, and Half and I spoke about this on the Sunday night pod, which is always ready for your Monday morning commute, just about how everybody in the AFL must be living in a meditative state at the moment. No thoughts in their mind, because any question you ask anyone at the moment, they just haven't thought about it.
I haven't actually thought about it, to be fair. I think the last few years I've gone in with the mindset of just enjoying my footy, have fun.
I haven't even thought about what's next. It's just the next 10 weeks, and that's critically important for this football club. We've got to finish with momentum. We've got to, whoever coaches them next, it gives them a good foundation to catapult into the pre-season with confidence.
Oh, mate, I'm nowhere near. I haven't thought about it for a while. Just going to sit down at the end of the year. I'm more worried about trying to play finals at the moment.
That, personally, that is something I haven't considered, purely because my mandate right now is to help this football club.
So if I got that right, Ben, Scott Pendlebury hasn't thought about playing next year. Dean Solomon hasn't thought about whether he wants to coach the Bombers.
Yep.
Toby Green hasn't thought about whether he's going to leave the Giants at
whether
season's
he's going
end.
To move his young family interstate.
Hasn't thought about it. And Josh Fraser hasn't even thought about the senior coaching position at the Blues.
Not something he's considered.
So one thought.
Everybody is just living in this beautiful, peaceful,
it's unbelievable.
Meditative state where they just...
They're living in the moment.
Yeah.
It's okay. What have you thought about for the future?
What haven't you thought about?
I'm an overthinker. The shorter list is what I haven't considered.
You've thought about having another kid?
Yeah, I've considered it.
Yeah.
I haven't thought about it.
Haven't decided yet, which is the correct answer. Why don't they just say that? That's my point.
Like, well, I think they are saying that.
Yeah, but why lie? Well, I don't know if they're lying. They might.
I think that's what they are saying. Well, I'm undecided. Like, rather than I haven't thought about it.
But just say that. I haven't thought about it.
Let's be honest. Surely they've thought about it. That, like, if Toby Green hasn't given one thought about where he's playing footy next year, please.
I just think there's a few better answers. It's a bit of fun. Yeah. Like, we know that's what they're saying, but maybe I just feel like it's caught on. Sort of like my unicorns. Just keep an eye out for people telling you that they haven't thought about something.
Nick from Brisbane is the next of our callers. 1-300-222-774. Hello, Nick.
Good evening, gentlemen. I was just having a chat with a few blokes at the pub on the weekend. Because of the inequity in the draw, should percentage stop once you've played every other side once? Because Adelaide got 7.2% lift and Brisbane got 9% yesterday.
So you're saying it should only count for your first meeting with an opposition?
Correct.
Because
Melbourne don't get a second chance to play Essendon or the Gold Coast. And improve their percentage.
I think that's a great... I actually don't think that's the worst shout getting around, given the teams that play some of the lower sides twice.
Well, the Lions have outscored the Bombers by 154 points in 8 quarters.
Yeah. Just on that, we don't see everybody having played once until the completion of round 24, the final round of the season.
Yeah.
Correct, yeah.
Which is quite incredible.
It stops the double-ups. You know, the sides getting... You know, lower teams are sending people in for surgery or going to rest players for the rest of the year or whatever like that. It just makes it a bit more even.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate your call. Just while we're on the Bombers, is the current form line helping or hurting James Hurd's chances?
No, I'm neutral on that. I really am, because there was no form line really when they released Brad Scott from his contract. So, I don't think they're playing any better or any worse at the moment. That's why I'm neutral.
So what do you think, Corb?
Yeah, I think it's actually hurting James Hurd. So I feel like if you put your finger in the wind, a lot of people will say, oh, this is helping James Hurd. He's the Matthew Lloyd said last week, you know, he's the only one that can save it. He's Essendon's only hope, I think, is what Lloyd said, which I was surprised to hear. But
very Essendon thing to say.
But, so I would argue you can't get anyone that's more passionate Essendon than Dean Solomon. Like, it was put to me, and you would know this better than me, Rammer, given obviously you were part of that dressing room, but James Hurd was like Wayne Carey in terms of the fact he was the best player on the team. Dean Solomon was like Glenn Archer. Like, he was the guy that united the locker room, and he bled for the football club and everything else, and the boys all rallied around him. So I would argue what Essendon's doing now is strip it all back, the passion piece, let's all buy in for the jumper. Yeah. I would argue... We're getting what we're getting on the back of that. That it's modern football, you know, the rah-rah of the dressing room only goes so far, that at the end of the day, this is a professional sports league and that you need to go and get the best possible coach that's out there on the market. And so if I was Essendon, I would feel like the short-term suggestion, you know, don't get sucked into the only one person can save us. I'd be thinking, holy smokes, you know, we've got to get something beyond just, you know, play for the badge, play for the club. We've got to go and get the very best coach out there to help this group. And as you've said before, Rama, the best development coach, yeah, because this team needs a lot of development.
That's what I'm big on that. I think, you know, who's going to be the best person to drive a young list forward, because they're certainly nowhere near a finished product. So who's going to have the energy to go and do that, but also then connect not only a playing group, but a football club as well. So you talk about staff and the importance of that. So, yeah, I just think that person has to come in with a great plan of, okay, here's how we're going to get the best out of all the way to probably Zach Reed's draft. You look where that is. That's when they, you know, really started to attack a draft. Are we getting the best out of those players yet? Or what can we get 20% more out of each of them?
18th for pressure, 18th for forward half intercepts, yeah, under Dean Solomon.
Just a quick one before we move on and get to Corbin's All-Australian team.
And some calls.
Is Mark McVay in the race?
As of a couple of weeks ago, he wasn't, because I had dinner with him.
Ooh. Right, okay.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if he's had a phone call since. He may have. Mm. He certainly may have. I think he'd be a terrific candidate. Yeah. You know, his football resume speaks for itself for what he's been able to do up in Sydney. Now, he's a bit out of sight, out of mind up there, but he's an incredible coach.
Yeah. Rob from St Kilda is next of our callers. Hello, Rob.
G'day. How's it going, guys?
Good, thank you. Thank you.
I'm a long-suffering Essendon supporter, and I've got a question for you guys. Why was Brad Scott sacked? Why hasn't the club explained the reason? Because ever since then, Solly, good guy as he is, I think he's floundering as a coach because the team just lost their aggression to the ball that Brad Scott got there a few times. And to my mind, all the things that Rama just talked about is the reason why Herd should come in, because he can motivate everybody there, unite everybody, and actually he's such a smart football brain as well. You know, we need something like that to improve the club, I suspect.
Yeah, not...
I hear what you're saying, Rob. So the motivation, I don't feel like players should need motivation to go out to perform. I feel like this group, and look, I was a believer in Brad should have stayed and coached for the remainder of the season. Then the club had the conversation.
100%.
This is such a young team.
Yep.
And whether they can handle a coach leaving or not, well, I think it's evident that they're finding it difficult.
Yep.
So I was a believer in Brad was doing the right things, playing the kids and going through the list, really,
yep,
to find out, well, this is what we've got and this is what we haven't got. And I believe that if it was a question of is Brad going to continue to coach or not, that should have come at the end of the season.
Yeah. Rob, I appreciate your call. I also just feel like that to make the case that, yeah, that Essendon, purely that what they need in James Hurd is that guy that's really passionate for the club, I feel like it sells Dean Solomon short. That you're almost saying, look, they haven't got that at the moment. But we're seeing it.
You will not find a more passionate person. Dean Solomon's, his family are up in northern New South Wales at the moment. He's come down to help. So initially, he came down just as a board member.
Correct.
And now he's coach for the club.
So this is what it looks like at the moment with a passionate Essendon person. Couldn't be more passionate for the club. And this is what it currently looks like. So if you want James Hurd, and I'm not saying he's not the right guy for the job and everything else, and if he wins the process, good luck to him. But it can't just be passion alone. No. It can't just be, oh, he wants to do it more than anyone else, and that's going to work, because Essendon have a person there at the moment that is as passionate about the football club as can be, and it doesn't translate to wins and losses. Marcus from South Melbourne on 1300 222 774. Hello, Marcus.
Good evening, gentlemen. Just a quick one on the All-Australian team, I think. I think Wanganeen Miller and Alex Pearce at Freo should be hands-on in the team. Mm. But I wish to ask advice, and I had this discussion with your lovely lady on the switchboard before I came through. Do you have advice to Freo supporters? Because the ones who most doubt that they're a chance for the premiership are actually us.
I think just enjoy the ride and see what comes of it. Enjoy winning lots of games. Keep, Marcus, would be my advice.
My advice would be keep the lid on it until you can take the lid off it.
Just enjoy the ride. Any advice, Corb?
Thank you.
Thanks, Marcus. Appreciate that. I'm sure it was Poppy Penny who Marcus was chatting to. Poppy's living this day by day at the moment as a hardcore Fremantle person. I have said this to Poppy. I feel like there's a whole portion of Fremantle supporters that are going to have to rebuild their whole personality if Fremantle win it. That everything's set up about being the little brother and the smaller guy in town and everything else. And
long-suffering. I support them even though we lose all the time and it never works out.
Bob Murphy talks about it as there's mountain climbers, that are used to doing it, like Hawthorne and Geelong, and they're used to climbing the mountain. And then there's astronauts that just land on top of the mountain and have to try and work out what goes on. Fremantle, like the Western Bulldogs, are astronauts, that if they get there, they will land and have to work out their surroundings from that point on. But I actually think they're the sentimental favourite, Fremantle. I think it's pretty clear.
It's still my pick.
Yeah. I feel like if you're not a Fremantle fan and your team doesn't feature in September, they're going to get a whole army of support.
I just like watching them.
Yeah. Should we do it?
Yep. Let's do it, Corbin. You've been so excited. You came over like a kid giddy on Christmas morning to tell me about your All-Australian team and who you've got in there.
So apologies last, so we'll do them at the end. You're welcome to chip in at any time, 1-300-222-774. I feel like the big questions are the rucks and the key defenders, but who is playing for an All-Australian spot in the last 6 weeks? This is my team as it stands currently.
We're going through the full team.
Yeah.
Wow. You said you wouldn't do that.
Block by block. We're going to start with the midfielders, right? Because this is where a whole lot of the action happens. Yep. As my starting ruckman, and this may have changed since Thursday, I have Max Gawn as the starting ruck. He's the number two rated player in the competition. This would be a record 9th All-Australian Blazer. The guys around him, no surprises. Dacos, Bont, Butters, 3 midfielders. The 2 wings.
Well, it won't be Butters.
Mm.
This is as of right now.
Yeah, but I'll bet.
Chad Warner on one wing and Jordan Dawson on the other.
So I've got a few things to pick apart immediately.
Yep.
Are you playing 3 rucks in your team?
I'm playing 3 rucks.
So what I want to tell you about that is that the biggest problem people have with All-Australian teams, Rama, is when it doesn't replicate a real team.
Yep.
And Hawthorn are the only team this year to have played 3 rucks when they played Reeves, Ramsden and Meek. They lost both of those games.
Yep.
No other team has done it apart from Hawthorn in those 2 games. That is not a real team
if you include three
ruckmen in your team.
Okay, but Dawson and Chad Warner also aren't wingers, which is why I included them in the same part of the argument.
Chad Warner's probably played more half forward.
Do you know who the top 5 rated wingers are? Harvey Thomas, Ollie Dempsey, Braden Cook, Matt Roberts, and Massimo D'Ambrosio. So you tell me which 2 of those deserve to be in the best team of the year.
I think Ollie Dempsey has an argument.
Yeah. Harvey Langford's been pretty good as well.
They're not above any of those other guys.
And I'll just tell you another problem.
I agree with that.
I'll tell you another problem with your rating system, Corb.
Yep.
So I did the game round 8 between Melbourne and Sydney and Sydney. I think you called the game for Fox Footy as well.
Yep.
Gawn and Grundy went head-to-head.
Yep.
So, like, Grundy took down Max Gawn on that day. He took down both Maxes, Heath and Gawn on that occasion.
He did?
He had 45 hitouts, 26 disposals, a goal, 11 clearances. Max had 22 hitouts, 18 disposals, and 2 goals. The player ratings had Max Gawn as the 3rd best player on the ground. They had Brody Grundy 4th.
Yep.
Do you know what the problem is? Anybody who watched the game
knew
that Grundy absolutely won that battle and was a better player than Max on that occasion.
It's not perfect.
As proven by the fact that the coaches' votes gave Brody Grundy 8 votes. Max Gawn did not poll a coaches' vote. Coaches' vote.
I've got both the other 2 rucks on the bench, Grundy and Jackson, who are both top 12 players in the competition this year. So I feel like they all deserve to be in the team. There's 23 spots. I don't know if you've heard this before, Ben, but some people in footy call Luke Jackson a unicorn, that they feel like he can play sort of any position. And so as a result, I feel like I can't overlook. If you're in the top 12 players in the game, you've got to be in the All-Australian team. So I can't leave one of the 3 of them out. But because you're prepared to, Ben, who is the one that you wouldn't have in there?
I think, unfortunately for Brody Grundy, it's probably... Well, it's hard on the argument that I've just made.
Correct.
So I think the next 6 weeks will decide it.
That's the ultimate fence sitting there if ever I've seen it.
Gawn, Jackson.
Yeah.
So you've got Grundy out.
I think that's the way I would go if I had to pick as well.
And yet when he went heads up with Gawn, he beat him.
If I was to meatloaf it, two out of 3.
But we're not talking about one game.
Yeah, but
we're talking about a body of work.
But it does feel relevant, though.
Why?
Because Grundy's been excellent the rest of the year, and then when he came up against the other guy that he's competing for the spot.
But you're not picking an All-Australian in one game.
But then when he came up in the show, so what, because Max dominates, you know, Nankervis or whatever, that counts more than when they went head-to-head, Grundy was better than Max.
But then what's the point of having ratings?
Well, yeah.
Well, they're imperfect, though.
They're imperfect.
You're telling me Max Gorn's the second-rated player in the competition.
They're just there as a bit of a guide. So they're not the be-all and end-all.
So
anyway,
we can't, like, so then should we pick Marcus Bontempelli versus Nick Daicos when they play against each other?
But it's not...
Who wins that battle?
Well, Nick every day of the week. But it's not... It's not picked by a computer, though. Like, you still have to run the eye over it. All right, the back line. The key backs are an interesting point here. So the two keys that I've gone for, and this is very contentious, Harris Andrews and Alex Pearce are my two backs. So there's a few guys that have been overlooked in this conversation, but it's not as hot a race as it has been in recent years. To flesh out the back line, I've got Wanganeen Millera on a back flank, Max Holmes on a back flank, who's been playing there, Lockie Ash in a back pocket, and Nick Blakey in the other back pocket. So that is my back six.
My two key backs are Wilkie and Andrews.
Yeah.
Pearce just missing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think those are the three. So you might put one of them on the bench, but I think it's Pearce, Andrews and Wilkie. Two on the ground, one on the bench.
Yep, that's what I've got. I've got Wilkie as part of my bench, which I'll get to in just a moment. And then the forward line, interestingly, the key forwards, as you'd expect, dominate the top five in the Colbert medal race. I've gone with Curnow at full forward, Tracy at centre-half forward, and then to flesh out my forward line, Watson in a forward pocket, Cozzy Pickett in another forward pocket, Horn Francis on a flank, and Heaney on the other flank.
See, I've got Treacy and Morris as my two key forwards at the moment.
Ooh.
I know Curnow and King have kicked more goals, but I think in terms of impact and influence...
So you've gone with Morris over Curnow?
Yep, at the moment.
Wow.
We're talking, what, how many goals are we talking? A couple of goals.
Yeah. And to complete my team, I've got Petrarca, his early season form, doing a lot of heavy lifting here. Wilkie, Grundy, Jackson, Newcomb as my five on the bench in my All-Australian team.
Yeah, I don't think Petrarca's there at the moment.
Oh, I'd probably put...
He missed a month as well.
I'd take him out because we know the rules. If you're going to put someone in, you got to take someone out. I'd take him out and put in Murphy Reid.
Murphy Reid. So he's ranked 91 in the competition, according to Champion Data.
Did you not hear what I just said about some of their ratings? They had Max Gorn rated as the third best player on the ground, and he didn't poll a coach's vote.
I like Murphy Reid as much as everybody else, but not just yet for
Corbin, me. Corbin, just the eye test as well. It's not just he's lost himself in the numbers.
So who have you taken out? Who have you taken out?
I've taken out Christian Petrarca.
Okay. Cool. I've got five Sydney players, three from the Dockers, two from the Hawks, the D's, the Power, and the Saints. Couple of apologies, which we love. Ed Richards, he's actually the 10th rated player in the competition this year.
So that disproves your whole theory. So Corbin said, look, if you're in the 12 best rated players in the comp, you've got to be in my team. Then you've left out someone who's in your top 10.
What is wrong with your comprehension skills? I'm essentially saying the numbers are not the be-all and end-all, but they give us a good guide.
You, verbatim, we can cut it and play it back to you.
You're talking about when I said Grundy.
You said if you are in the best 12 players in the comp, you've got to be in the team.
Yeah.
And then you just said, by the way, I've left out a guy who's in the top 10.
So if we take the numbers...
That's exactly what you said.
If we take
checkmate.
If we take the numbers out and you were listing the best 12 players on the eye test this year, you would have the three rucks in there. You wouldn't have Ed Richards in there.
I think you're trying to sidestep it. We'll cut it up.
By anyone's measure, if you were to say, who are the best 12 players in the comp? If I said to you, Ben, you got to go interview a bunch of Brownlow medal chances or whatever it turns out to be.
Hamish McLaughlin, get ready for Brownlow medal night.
You wouldn't be interviewing Ed Richards, but you'd interview the three rucks.
I think that's fair.
Bailey Smith's the other one that's I didn't have in my team. I didn't have Zach Bailey, Shea Bolton, Darcy Wilmot, Bailey Dale, Murphy Reid, so a few apologies there. None of them made my team.
A sneaky chance.
Yeah, he's been very dynamic. Yeah.
I think the last 6 weeks will help.
You'd rather finish strong than strong, wouldn't you? There's a little momentum. I think what it does remind me when you do this is how hard a team it is to get into. I don't even think we quite celebrate and recognise it enough.
Quick one to finish. Damien Hardwick yesterday, Saturday night after the Suns' loss.
This year's, you know, effectively gone. What we've got to do is forge our way forward about what we want ourselves to look like for next year, you know, from my point of view. So the challenge is firmly set there for the playing group, you know, who we want to be. You can sit there and after tonight's performance, go into your shell or you can sit there and fight for something. We've got to be better than what we are.
You just said season's gone in one of your previous answers. Is that you putting a line through you guys for finals?
Well, it becomes pretty much mathematically impossible, doesn't it, at this stage or close, thereabouts?
I thought you already went out, but I might have that wrong.
Maybe. The way we're playing, we don't deserve to make it.
What's going on here, Ram? So is game and percentage out? Is this reverse psychology from Dimmer?
That's a statement to the playing group, clearly, that he's not happy. So they're a game outside the Wild. They're 14th at the moment, but a game behind St Kilda in 10th on 32 points. Their last six are Dogs home, Carlton at the Docklands, Melbourne home, GWS away, Brisbane away, St Kilda away. So they're all 50-50 games.
Mm.
Probably the Brisbane one, I'd say they would.
Yeah.
Brisbane will start favourite in that one. But the other ones, I think they're all a reasonable show.
So they play the Bulldogs on Sunday, which is a fascinating game. Does it take the pressure off or does it put pressure on them when the coach comes out and says, oh, well, season's done?
On.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, on. That's the idea of it.
I wonder how the Dogs would feel.
What do you mean, how?
Because does it put more pressure on them?
Because he's going to see who really wants to play.
Right.
That's the psychology of it.
Mm.
It's like, right. Well, if you come out and go, oh, the coach said the season's done, I'm not going to try anymore, Dimmer will tear shreds off you.
So he'll see the ones who turn their toes up this week.
Correct. Yeah.
I'm going to be watching that game to see who's dog hungry and who's just a little comfortable.
That's what he's at. Because you hear him, we've got to build some momentum now for next year and blah, blah, blah. So it's just pure reverse psychology.
And then Ross Lyon was the other interesting one who spoke about Lachie Neale and the fact that they're out of the race. It was put to him that they missed out on Lachie Neale. This is what Ross had to say.
Yeah, we didn't miss out because it would have been something we could pursue and the relationship was strong and that could have got done if we were in a position to do that, but we're not. So I didn't want any noise for Lachie, his club, and us in the middle of it and just... Yeah, in the middle of it, so we're clearly out, so it's done.
So they could have pursued it, but they're not in a position to.
That sounds like missed out because they're spending a lot of money on on a few players. Nazzy's on $2 million a year or thereabouts.
So how did they not miss out?
They did. They're a joy to watch at the moment, though. St Kilda, I think
I enjoyed Saturday.
They've gone past 100 points.
I think they're a real show on Thursday night.
Who's a better kick in the competition right now, Naz or Nick?
I'll take Naz.
Corbin?
Corbin's taking Nick every day.
I'd vote for Nick on everything.
Oh, I think Nick's a marginally better kick, but I think Naz can be more creative, which I think was the answer from Bob Murphy yesterday, and I liked it.
That was AFL Monday. You can hear it live from 6:30 p.m. every Monday night on ABC Radio across Victoria. The home of your footy conversation right here on ABC AFL Daily. Hope you can join me tomorrow. Bob Murphy will join me as we pull apart all the hot-button issues out of the Monday night footy shows across the various networks. All the hot takes, we'll play them to Bob Murphy and get his reaction as we do every Tuesday. Hope you can join us then. This is ABC AFL Daily.